tell you a little bit about how we use computers in working with causal sets, and in particular, why this, not all of us use it, in particular David doesn't use it, he's doing more high performance things, but for doing what I call a scratch pad, so the title of the talk was a Lisp scratch pad for working with causal sets, or post-sets, and tell you why Lisp is particularly convenient for that kind of application, because it gives you the kind of minimum overhead and to start up on looking something exploratory, somewhat, I suppose, for similar reasons that Mathematica is useful in the way Pedro described, because, again, it doesn't have a lot of overhead to start working with it. But Lisp is particularly well-suited to causal sets. I hope to explain why, and also maybe to convince some people to get interested in it. It would be nice to have at least one other person who uses Lisp. And then if you do get interested, I have a large number of functions that I've written that are available, if you just ask me. They're actually on my website, but they're not the most up-to-date versions if you just go there. An outline of what I want to say is, first of all, what is a causal set mathematically? Describe a couple of sample problems that you end up doing when you work with causal sets, and then describe briefly why Lisp is useful, why it provides data structures that are particularly well suited to causal sets, and then describe a little bit about the library of functions that I just developed to work with it. So first of all, what is a causal set? A causal set, as you may know, is a proposal for the inner basis of a deep structure of space-time. That's a discrete object. But let me first define it for you what it is mathematically. It's one in which you abstract from space-time just the causal relationships and nothing else, and recover up all geometry and everything else just from those causal relationships in their discrete form. So mathematically, it's what's called a poset, or a partially ordered, which is short for partially ordered set, which is just a set of elements, x, y, z, with an order relation specified between them, which you can think of physically to mean x is to the past of y, or sometimes we use the language of ancestry. You can think of a causal set as a kind of family tree. You can read this as x as an ancestor of y. And it's subject to the other day, in one of the seminars about a day ago, someone talked about DAG, directed acyclic graph. Causal set is a special case of that. It has this order relation, which makes it directed, and it's assumed to be acyclic, which just means, in one tricky way of describing it, saying that no element can precede itself, so there are no causal loops. And then the other key attribute of causality or causal spaces is transitivity, that if x precedes y precedes z, then x precedes z. So that's the definition of a poset. And there are different ways of representing it. The easiest way of drawing it is in terms of a space-time diagram, which is called, in mathematics, a Hasse diagram. So let me take the simplest, sort of not completely trivial causal set, which is probably this diamond. So it would consist of four elements. Let's name A, B, C, and D. And what this is drawing is that A, for example, A precedes B, is illustrated by this edge in the graph or this link. But it's also true that A precedes B, which is not illustrated here, but is defined by, is implied by transitivity, since A precedes B and B precedes D. So you read it just the way you would expect to read it if you thought of it as a space-time diagram. There are many other ways of representing this. So if you have to think, what data structure would I use? So one way is just in terms of a matrix of 0 and 1 entries that shows you which elements precede which elements and which elements don't. So in this case, if I were to represent it, the same causal set, I would have an A precede, by convention, no element precedes itself. But A precedes every other element, so I put in 1, 1, 1. And if you look at B, it precedes only D, so we get this. C has the same relations to every other element, so it's the same row. And then finally, D precedes nothing, so you can see from this that it's maximal element of the causal set. That is, it precedes nothing else. Notice that these two, there's some sort of duality between these two representations. Here I've chosen to illustrate not just the links, these minimal relations, but I've chosen to include every relation. So I include that A precedes D. If you want to pass between them, it's not at all easy. You need to get from this to this, you need to take what's called a transitive closure, that is, to get all the relations that are implied by the relations shown here. Because from this to this is much easier. You just need to find the relations that are not implied by others. But those are typical kind of combinatorial problems that you need to that come up when you're dealing with quotients or causal sets. A third way, so this is sort of one way of representing it.
And is it unique to go to representation one?
Yes, this is unique. That can be proven. And you can also specify it by getting some relations. This is the minimal set of relations. This is the max. This is the full set of relations. Of course, you can specify it by anything in between. Actually, to get from something in between to here, you just take the transitive closure. To get here, there's no simple thing that I know to do other than to take the transitive closure and then, once you have it, sort out which is a link and which is not a link. A third way that I wanted to mention is the past function. In other words, this is actually what I'll be using in the list program, to the list functions, is to associate every element its past. I'll draw a picture later, but in other words, it's a mapping that tells you the past of D consists of B, C, and A, the past of B consists of A, and so on. The past of A is empty. That's a third way. And the fourth way is a set of, just to give the set of pairs, which are the relations, that's pairs. I mentioned that because John Stenbridge has a package in Maple. I won't write it down explicitly, but that's what he uses in his package. So there's a package, if you like Maple, there's a package for working with quotients written in Maple. But I won't say, for lack of time, too much about the physical background of all this, but let me say one thing, which is this slogan. What has this got to do with quantum gravity or space-time, which we normally think of in terms of geometry? Of course, it was implicit in some of the things David said, but the slogan that encapsulates the relationship is that geometry is equal to order plus number. And what it means, or what it's referring to, is the fact that in the continuum, so let's go back now, forget about discreteness for the moment, just go back to continuous space-time. If you know just the causal order, if you know which point events can influence which other point events, and which cannot, which are space-like to each other, then you actually know almost everything about the geometry. You get the topology, you get the differentiable structure, which is a technical thing, and you get the metric up to a conformal metric. So in other words, you get the conformal metric. If you now added, you're missing just one number per space-time point, and that number can be associated with volume information. So basically, what this gives you is basically GAB over some power of the determinant. It depends on the dimension, 1 over D, I guess. In other words, a thing that's conformally invariant. And then what this gives you, what you're lacking, therefore, in one way of looking at it, is the determinant, or which is volume information. So the idea of the causal set is to just count to get this volume information, that the volume, a realistic causal set like David showed, some complicated thing, if this represents some portion of space-time and you want to know what its volume is, you just count the number of elements corresponding to that portion of space-time. And that's the number. So the number is giving the volume information. That, in a nutshell, is at least the kinematic aspects of how causal sets are related to space-time. So what kind of problems would you be working with if you were interested in causal sets? So David showed one, which I won't repeat it, which was to study the sequential growth. What that means is generating elements one by one and then choosing the relations according to some rule. So you start, say, with a single element, then you produce another, maybe I should make it a little bigger, produce another, and then maybe another one like this, maybe another one like this, and so on. So the thing to notice here is that the causal set is changing its structure and even the number of elements. So you need some sort of data structure that is amenable to this kind of dynamically behaving thing. There's no fixed grid, there's no space-time, there's nothing in which you could embed this. In fact, causal sets, that's sort of the biggest, from the computer point of view, that's the worst problem that you have, is that everything is global in nature. There's no simple way or known way, I would say, to parallelize them. You either need a different idea or just something very fast or some very clever kind of parallelization. So that's one kind of thing, which David talked a little bit about. It shows up, it illustrates how you need to handle changing causal sets. And the other thing that will also illustrate that, you might want to do, or we do want to do, and are doing, Monte Carlo simulations on causal sets. That means, again, you have some sort of causal set like this. But it's not just that you put like a spin at each, you might put at each vertex, you might put, say, a scalar field value, something like that. But you need this, in order to have dynamical gravity, you need the structure of the post set itself to be dynamical, so you need to break links and reconnect and so on, and add and remove elements. So this is not convenient if you use the kind of matrix representation that I talked about before. It can be done, but it's just a lot of overhead. For example, let's look, for example, what you would have to do. Let's look what you would have to do if you wanted to remove, say, in the process of this Monte Carlo simulations, one of your moves might be to remove a particular element, add it back in another place, add a new element. So suppose we wanted to remove this element C. Well, that corresponds to this line, this row, and this column. So basically, you want to take these out, but that's not a simple thing to do. Then you have to reorganize the matrix and so on. You would end up just with the matrix that was left over here. Or if you want to add it in, you have to sort of enlarge the matrix. So if you treat it, and also if you were keeping track of, say, a scalar field at each element of the, or a spin at each element of the causal set, you'd have to have a vector in the computer sense, a vector, just a list, not space-time vectors. You'd have to have a vector of values of that matrix, of that field, and you'd have to adjust that vector and so on. All this can be done, but as I said, it makes it a little harder to set out on doing some simple computation. It's something that you wish would be simple. So it would be easier, everything, life would be better if we had some sort of data elements that instead of representing the causal set indirectly by numbers, which is what a matrix does, represented the elements of the causal set directly in the language. And that's actually what Lisp does. It provides something called symbols, which can be used directly to represent causal set elements. So we like an element to be an object of the language. And in Lisp, that can be done with what's called symbol. So let me say a little bit about what a symbol is and how you can use it to represent, or how in my set of functions I do use it to represent the represent causal sets. Okay, so Lisp, I also want to mention that Lisp, like Mathematica and Maple, is interactive. It's also self-typing. You don't have to declare variables and so on. and you don't have to compile anything. It makes it good for kind of scratchpad kind of applications, as I was calling them. So what is a Lisp symbol? It's some sort of data structure like this that has two components and some others that are not important. The first one gives the value, and the second one gives auxiliary information called property list. So you could, if you use a symbol to represent, if you use a symbol to represent, so this thing is that, if we use a symbol to represent an element of a causal set, then we can use this value cell in the symbol to give the connectivity information, the causal information itself, and this we can use for auxiliary information, like, for example, the value of the scalar field at that particular element. It all comes bundled together, so if you add or delete that element, you just remove that symbol from your list of elements. So, in fact, let me show you how you would represent the same diamond causal set in terms of symbols. So we would have say one symbol to represent the element A in that diamond over there. The diamond was A, B, C, D. So for each symbol, we want to associate its past. In the case of element A, its past is empty, so we just put zero on the empty set, something called nil in this. And if there was a scalar field, we would put in this, we would put the value of the scalar field. In the case of B, its past is A, so we would have the set A. This probably also provides, like Maple and so on, provides sets. And then we would put here 5, B, and so on, and then D would be the only non-trivial one, less trivial, and 5, B. So what we're actually putting here is the symbols themselves. I mean, if you look into the guts of Lisp, you would see that they're pointers or something like that. But in fact, from the point of view of the language, these are just the symbols themselves. So it's a list of elements of that symbol, consisting of those symbols that represent the past as a given symbol. So the poset itself, if I call it P, would be a set of symbols A, D. And if we wanted to remove C now, we just delete it from that list and it's gone. If you wanted to remove D, you just delete it and it's gone. If you wanted to remove C, you have to be a little careful because C could have appeared and did appear in the past of some other element. So you'd be better go through each element and remove it from the past. So the moral is that in doing it this way, you work directly with the elements and their pasts, which is the structure of the poset, rather than with some numerical representation like a matrix. And by doing this, you also get the advantage that it's all automatically independent of labeling. You basically don't have to label the elements in some sort of general covariance. So that's the sort of motivation for using this. And now let me just give you I mentioned that there's that I've written this suite of Lisp functions which can be used to work with causal sets. So let me just list some of the ones. There's actually a large number, but just to show the idea, the kind of thing that you can do. So let me see. So one I mentioned before, transitive closure. That is putting in all the relations that are implied by the other relations. Another one is finding the maximal elements. This comes up a lot in practice. So in this case, it's just a single element here. Another one is to compute the links. That's passing from for example, from the full set of relations to the Hasse diagram, the irreducible relations, you can find what's called the height, that would be like the proper length between the between two, the top and bottom, between the lowest and highest element in the causal set, and something called the width, which is the largest anti-chain, the largest set of space-like elements, mutually space-like elements. This uses a very clever thing that some people might know, a very clever algorithm called, it comes up in many contexts, called the Eggerberry-Koenig algorithm. I don't know, does that ring a bell with anyone? It's very common in combat. Okay, and we can find the dimension. That's one of the first things you want to know when you have generated the causal set, like David was talking about four-dimensional de Sitter space. And we can simulate the CSG principle. One more, I've leaked some out, but we'll sprinkle. We can sprinkle points into Minkowski space. That's about it. Also, this package or this suite has some enhancements to the Lisp syntax, which I could talk about some other time if you were interested. And let me just mention one thing. If you're interested in trying this out or learning a little bit about this, actually, almost anyone who has any Unix system has a little copy of Lisp within it that you may not be aware of. If you have the editor Emacs, it's written in some baby, but not too baby, version of Lisp called Emacs Lisp or eLisp. This package is actually designed to run with that. So if you're interested, you don't need to download any kind of Common Lisp program or something. You can just open up Emacs.